You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Chris Holsky in for Christy Cameron. Breaking news that we are following: an RCMP press conference about the killing of Sikh leader Hardeep Jar has just wrapped up. Got a summary of some of the information that we learned during the course of this media conference. Police took custody of all three suspects in Edmonton. They were residing there. All three suspects are Indian nationals. They are non-permanent residents of Canada. The three were arrested this morning and at different times. Two of the individuals were at home. One was not. Apparently, these arrests all happened relatively peacefully. RCMP investigators are aware of others who may have played a role in the homicide. They are investigating if there are any ties to the government of India, but no information from the Mounties to provide on that at this time. The RCMP has collaborated with agencies in India in the past and continue to do so today. But they made note collaboration has been, quote, rather challenging and difficult over the last several years. Again, the three men taken into custody without any issues. That press conference by the RCMP, again, just wrapping up, and we will hear more from that conference during the news and later on CFRA's Ottawa Now. It's 4:12.
Hey, my question for you today is...
Only one question.
Quick question.
Question of the day on News Talk 580 CFRA.
An encampment set up by pro-Palestinian student protesters at the University of Toronto's downtown campus is in its second day. The university has said the tents, banners, and flags are a safety concern. It asked the students to leave by last night, but says does not intend to remove protesters if their activities remain peaceful. The encampment is one of several established at Canadian university campuses in recent days. And now a new online Léger poll suggests the majority of Canadians feel their right to freedom of speech is in danger. 57% of respondents said their free speech in Canada is under threat. Of those 34% said it was somewhat threatened, 23% said they considered the threat a serious one. Some 36% said their free speech rights were in no danger, while 7% said they did not know or did not answer. On the other hand, 3 out of 4 respondents said they currently feel comfortable expressing their views, but only 71% say they are comfortable when it comes to more controversial subjects such as abortion, gun control, and immigration. The question of the day today: do you believe freedom of speech and freedom of expression are under threat in Canada? I spoke with Jim Turk, the director of the Center for Free Expression at Toronto Metropolitan University, earlier to get his opinion on the topic. He says freedom of speech and expression is always under some sort of threat, but not in the way people claim or believe it is.
Everyone is in favor of freedom of expression until they come across expression that they don't like. So it's always under threat in the sense that there's always people who are unhappy that certain kinds of things are able to be said or that certain kinds of things aren't being said. And often the people who see freedom of expression under threat now, like many people who are more conservative and feel conservative voices aren't heard, were not so much in favor of freedom of expression of people they didn't like, and conversely on the left.
As Turk explains, rights and freedoms are not absolute, not even in Canada.
There is no such thing as unlimited freedom of expression in any country. There are limits. In Canada, you can't engage in violence. I can't punch you in the mouth and say, well, I'm just expressing my dislike for your point of view. You can't threaten violence. You can't defame people. So there are a lot of limits on it. But generally, our courts take the position that a democratic society is based fundamentally on an ongoing public discourse about what's legitimate and what's not legitimate.
A key point from Turkey says public discourse has to be protected.
And that public discourse has to be protected even from majoritarian views, because a government can get elected, it can pass laws, we have to obey the laws, but we never lose our right to criticize the government, to press for change, and so forth. So there's this strong tradition in Canada of saying it's a very high bar before expression can be restricted legally and by our courts.
Question of the day: do you believe freedom of speech and freedom of expression are under threat in Canada? You can text us at 580-580. Standard rates may apply. Some early takes from the text board. Richard from Barrhaven writing, I do not believe for one second that free speech is under attack. The problem is people don't understand the difference between free speech and hate speech. It's okay to have an opinion, but when that opinion turns into hate, you have now gone beyond civility and the spirit of free speech. Chris in Canada writes, I'm not sure why the poll says some think freedom of speech slash expression is in jeopardy. The liberals have put many motions in place to shut down thoughts that do not align with their agenda slash ideals. We have laws against hate speech and threats the courts are there to decide on. That's Chris in Canada's take. Todd from Brayside writes, it's a tough one. Quote, I feel like I'm going to get blasted for this one. If our freedom is being squashed, how do these encampments exist? How do trucks drive 3 days, it was even longer than that, across the country to try to set up the trucker protest? I'm pretty sure if this happened in China or Russia, they would change their minds. We are free here and have freedom of expression. If you're spilling false information and conspiracy theories, you'll probably be censored. Again, I welcome your take on this. You can text us at 580-580. Coming up in a moment, how is your retirement looking? And are you concerned that you may not just be paying for your own retirement, but someone else's ongoing life? We're going to be talking about retired parents helping their adult-aged kids get by on matters that used to seem so simple. That's up next. I'm Chris Holsky and for Christy Cameron on CFRA's Ottawa Now.
This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Question of the day. You can text us at 580-580. Do you believe freedom of speech and freedom of expression are under threat in Canada? Drew from Orleans says freedom of expression was taken away from the truckers, COVID origins, effectiveness of the COVID vaccine, etc., etc., etc. I am going to point out they were there for 3 weeks. Before anything happened, they have been back in some forums various times throughout the course of the years that have passed since. And in fact, frequently there are people in front of the PMO who are trying to carry the same messages consistently on Wellington Street to the point that they're yelling at him during the course of the solar eclipse instead of, you know, getting some eye protection and taking a look at the sun. It's not like they're being swept away and taken away every single day. There's still definitely a degree of freedom of expression that exists. But hey, you know, discourse, discussion, totally fine. I just dislike it when you have an instance where someone is saying, I believe this, 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 and this, and someone comes back and says, well, you know, there's that, there's this, that goes counter to what you're saying right now. And then the person goes straight to the argument saying, oh, you're violating my free speech. I can't say whatever I want. I think that's a problem. That's not discourse. It's just gainsaying, trying to do something when an argument is over, saying, you know what? I'm not going to talk to you, you know. If you're going to have a conversation about things like that, at least try to have them in good faith. I will say that much. Issues that are facing retired Canadians, and it's one that that I feel like you could see it coming, particularly when we had the boomerang generation that popped up during the earlier part of this century, and it feels like it's kind of grown since then. According to the annual Fidelity Investments Canada Retirement Report for 2024, 59% of retirees, 59, well over half, report helping their non-student adult children with both day-to-day expenses and big-ticket items like home purchases, weddings, and even education savings for their grandchildren. And we're learning it's having a negative impact on their own finances. Joining us now to talk about this is Michelle Monroe, the Director of Tax and Retirement Research at Fidelity Investments Canada. Good afternoon, Michelle.
Hi, Chris. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
Great. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we talk about having a negative impact on finances. What kind of negative impacts are retirees seeing as they continue to pay for their kids well into adulthood?
Well, yeah. So this is, as you said, almost 6 in 10 of retirees are helping in some capacity with their, and we look at it as non-student adult children. And what we're looking at is it's impacting their own retirements as well, because it's a decrease of the funds that they have to support their own retirements.
Yeah, this is something that not necessarily it's money that's packed away for a rainy day or trying to, you know, like say that, you know, I'm going to take someone's inheritance, for example, and I'm going to go and spend that on a trip. It's actually like everyday purchases, it sounds like, that people are starting to struggle with as they're on a fixed income.
Right, because it's going from their day-to-day living expenses to even larger big-ticket items. And retirees are generally on a somewhat fixed income. And also with the rising trend of rising longevity. People are living longer and longer. It's a balance to, and people do want to help their next generation, but also fund their own retirements for the entirety of their retirements.
Yeah, and we're having issues with inflation, and that's something that's no different for retirees, as well as a large number saying that inflation is having a negative financial impact on their fixed incomes in retirement.
Oh, absolutely. And thinking, well, things that are indexed for inflation, CPP, old age security, but fewer and fewer Canadians actually have defined benefit pension plans that are also indexed for inflation. So when you think about the different sources that one would have in retirement, what are those sources that are indexed for inflation? And especially as we're living through a period of time where there's higher inflation, how do you mitigate that and deal with the higher inflation rates?
I'm going to circle back to, we're talking about, we're speaking with Michelle Monroe, the Director of Tax and Retirement Research at Fidelity Investments Canada, but according to how a recent study, a retirement report, 59% of retirees report helping their non-student adult children with both day-to-day expenses and big-ticket items are having a negative impact on their own finances. I'm talking about familial relationships and things like that. I mean, how difficult must it be, for example, for a retiree when you're talking about this level of support, whether it's small or large, to, you know, be able to go to their child and say, you know, whether they're growing up or not, and say, hey, we're not going to pay for this for you anymore.
That's a very difficult discussion to be having, but it's also launching the next generation as well. But I think during our current economic situation, and we're looking going into the future, but I would expect that 6 in 10 is going to increase going into the future. So it's going to be more and more retirees are going to be wanting to help their adult children. But when we looked at pre-retirees and we asked them, well, do you think you'll be supporting your adult children in your own retirement? Only 4 in 10 said that they expected to. So you can see that there's a gap. Well, there's a current gap between 6 in 10 who say that they are versus 4 in 10 pre-retirees who think that they're going to have to. So we're looking at 2 in 10 there. But I would expect that gap is going to increase as the retirees, pre-retirees become retirees.
Well, that's also one of the big questions about this is that there's a lot lower outlook when it comes to prosperity for people who are working right now about when they will be able to retire. So maybe they don't even qualify as a retiree when they take the survey years from now.
So when we take, we've actually been doing the survey for a number of years, and you've touched upon something that I find fascinating, is that we looked at just the outlook of people in the survey, which we're looking at the pre-retirees who are 45 and older. And what we've seen is a steady decline overall in people who say, yeah, I have a positive outlook on retirement. But when we looked at that between those who are retirees and those who are pre-retirees, retirees had a more positive outlook than the pre-retiree group. And that pre-retiree group is decreasing. Back in 2018, where 73% said, yeah, I'm feeling pretty positive. And in 2024, it was down to only 60% of pre-retirees saying that they have a positive outlook on retirement. So it's declining. Part of that, I think, is the media every day. No offense.
None taken.
The media every day. There's like, well, what's happening on with the interest rates? What's going on with the housing? Will the young people be able to afford homes? Inflation. So it does impact people's perceptions of their outlook on retirement.
Well, we've all got to work and hopefully retire someday. Michelle, thanks for joining the show today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was Michelle Monroe, the Director of Tax and Retirement Research at Fidelity Investments Canada. Coming up in a moment, I have some questions for the National Capital Commission about their parks. I think I've been pretty dumb when it comes to what I've had to say about some of their parks, and I think I'm going to get set straight. That's after the news with Callum Fraser. CFRA's Ottawa Now, Chris Holsky, in for Christy Cameron.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Chris Holsky in for Christy Cameron. And this might be the perfect song. I feel like someone might get me back here. Look, I tend to present myself as a bit of a smarty pants, but the truth is I can be a real idiot. And this is one of those instances where I make note of something or maybe complain about something offhand. And I think, you know what? I'm probably being an idiot here. On social media this time of year, I tend to poke a little bit of fun at the National Capital Commission for a couple of weeks in the early spring about people turning around when they encounter locked bathrooms in parks. The weather's nice. The snow's gone. People head out to the pass. They've been there for weeks. Maybe they even hold an event. There have been a couple over the course of the last week. They need to get to the facilities, and then they have to continue to hold it in for a while. I manage. I think everyone manages. It's just a couple of parks I'm talking about. It's just the start of May. A lot of hard work going on to get some major attractions open fully in Ottawa over the course of the next couple of weeks. Ottawa, Gatineau, a ton of infrastructure managed by the NCC. The geography, it's nuts. Well outside Ottawa City Centre and everywhere within it, frankly, to well north of Gatineau into literal hills. And joining me today to, I hope set me straight, is one of the foremost authorities on how the parks and properties start to look in the spring. Marc-Antoine Poitras is a senior manager of operations for Ontario with the National Capital Commission. Marc-Antoine, good afternoon.
Hey, Chris, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing today?
Very good, thanks.
But March and April, they come around, the snow melts, and people head back to the trails. Like I said, they've been there for a while. They couldn't get to it, in some of them, in some cases, because they were inaccessible. You got snow-covered parks. It's not necessarily the case anymore. But it's not like everything is ready again for everyone, for everything at the flip of a switch. There's a lot going on in terms of maintenance to try to get everything up to level. How many people are working on start-of-season upkeep right now in the city of Ottawa, and when do they get started? It may not be an exact number that you have, but I'd imagine it's something that it's very, very large.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say we've got hundreds of between contractors and staff as well. We've got the city of Ottawa crews working on some of our sites as well to kind of get everything going. Like you mentioned, launching into spring operations, it's more of a ramping up process than flicking a switch. Your crews need to convert the fleets of trucks and equipment that we've got set up for winter operations, take off all of those attachments, the plows, the snow blowers, the salters. We need to maintain the equipment and then, add on and get them ready for spring. And obviously this is a time consuming process and it makes us less reactive once we're done to any kind of winter precipitation. So we always try to time it for, when the risk of precipitation is past. And obviously, even like this year, we all remember that big snowfall we had in early April.
Yes, that's right.
We were halfway through doing that when we had to kind of stop our operations and go back to it. So, just ramping it up takes some time. And then obviously, we're trying to get out there as early as possible. Many of these sites we have access to them at the same time as everybody else. And, our crews are sick of winter. They're happy. They're eager to get out there. They want to start the spring activities. And so obviously, the first thing we do is we try to get onto the pathways. We try to sweep them and clean them to make them, accessible to the individual, to the users. But also we have to kind of inspect the sites and the areas to make sure that there's no health and safety issues.
Yeah, and clearly it's just like it could be something physical, like a branch hanging down where it shouldn't
exactly
be. You never know what's happened there over the course of a winter season.
And we haven't had eyes on it, for most of the winter because the sites are, obviously snow covered, right?
Yeah. Well, this is one thing though, and you mentioned snow cover on top of something. A lot of people take a look at a park and they'll say, well, the snow is gone from the top, so maybe everything's ship shape and ready to go. But it's like that's not necessarily true in all cases. Like, especially when you're talking with something with like piping to get towards like a washroom or a water fountain.
Yeah.
How solid is the ground at that time, and is it safe to have that kind of operation if you don't know how warm the ground itself is beneath the surface?
Yeah, that's correct, actually. And I was just about to mention that because you had mentioned the washrooms earlier. So, all of our water-based infrastructure, be they washrooms, drinking fountains, decorative fountains, we can't risk putting water into them until we know that all danger of ground frost has passed. If we open them too early and we get a freeze, it could cause significant and very expensive damages. And so usually, we're mid-April by the time we're able to turn the water on. And then once we've done that, we still have to get the facilities ready. We still have to get the water tests to make sure that the water, in the case of potable water, is safe to drink. I'm happy to say that all our washrooms have been open for a little while now, and we're in the process of finalizing opening up all our drinking fountains. Decorative fountains are next.
That's good to hear. And this is a lot that you have to deal with, clearly. I mean, the number of parks and spaces that the NCC manage in Ottawa, I think it's a lot larger than a lot of people suspect.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just the parks, right? We've got all of our parkways.
Yes.
We've got the green belts. We've got all the trailheads in the green belt. We have Confederation Boulevard, right? We're in the process of putting out all of the seasonal furniture, the benches, the bike racks, the planters. And so there's a lot of people and there's a lot of sequencing that goes on with that. I'm the same as everybody else. As soon as the sun comes out, I'm in my shorts and, at the end of March. But it's just, unfortunately, these things do take time.
All right. I have been successfully told. And thank you so much for your good humor with this, Marc-Antoine, today.
No problem. It's my pleasure to be on.
It's like, man, that's just like that. That was huge. Just that one bit talking about, the surface level of the ground and what it's like with, you got to be careful with the piping and maybe not everything is necessarily ready the minute that the snow disappears in the city of Ottawa. And, you have a lot of mindset colliding with practicality when it comes to getting things open. That was Marc-Antoine Poitras, Senior Manager of Operations for Ontario with the National Capital Commission. Coming up, we like to think that we're compassionate, but do we act on it? Statistics say, for the most part, no, we do not. The National CEO of the Canadian Mental Health Association is going to be speaking on this with us on CFRA's Ottawa Now. I'm Chris Holsky, and for Christy Cameron.
Listen anytime, anywhere, through your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. Now, Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron continues on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Chris Holsky in for Christy Cameron. New data from the Canadian Mental Health Association reveals Canadians are not as compassionate as we claim to be. Despite 92% of Canadians claiming to be compassionate, only 38% took action in the past year to alleviate hardship. Joining us now to talk about this is Margaret Eaton, the National CEO of the Canadian Mental Health Association, behind the study. Margaret, good afternoon.
Hi, Chris.
Now, it's one thing to take a look at the number and you take a look at the disparity of 92% and 38%. I mean, you're talking about 92% say they feel a certain way, but, a call to action towards a feeling is something that may not necessarily be the same. But it's actually this figure that I think is pretty telling. According to your data, nearly 4 in 5 Canadians, so 78%, think Canada could be a more compassionate country by doing more to help those in need through social support programs and better laws and policies. So what we're seeing here is we're seeing 78% of Canadians thinking Canadians should do something about this, but only 38% are taking matters upon themselves to do so.
That's so correct, Chris. Exactly. Unfortunately, sometimes we push off that responsibility to others when we should be taking it on ourselves. So when we ask people, how do you show compassion and how did you show compassion in the last year? For those 38% that were acting, they were doing some common things like donating to a cause, volunteering, raising awareness of causes, and they pointed to particular causes that they were particularly concerned about and had compassion for. And those were things like mental health, the environment, poverty, and food insecurity. So I think there's a long way that we can go as Canadians to live up to how we think about ourselves.
And what changes can someone make? I mean, they say they'd like to see more compassion. They'd like to do so. Are there simple things that they can do to display that level of care that they say that they want to see, but are not necessarily following through with?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And this is what we celebrate during Mental Health Week, which is next week. We're really focusing on these acts of compassion, that if you see somebody who's suffering, what can you do to relieve that suffering? And so we do encourage people to get engaged with others. And that can be things like donating and volunteering. But there's other just simple ways to show compassion, things like helping a friend or a neighbor or supporting somebody who is in grief or who is struggling, even just by reaching out, making a phone call, connecting with someone to show that you care. A lot of times people can feel a bit uncomfortable doing that, but most people say they love it when people actually reach out to them. And in a world where we often have kind of barriers between connecting, we're behind screens all the time. I think it's so important that we actually reach out and talk.
This is a key point here. Another stat you have here, over half The people you spoke with, they admitted feeling overwhelmed by the issues and they're unsure where to start. You did mention something small, but you know, some of it can be a challenge sometimes. You see a problem and think, you know, where exactly am I going to go to try to help sort this out?
That is so true. And that's one of the other things that we found in research is that when you practice compassion, it's beneficial to your mental health because it actually reminds you that you can make a difference in a troubled world, even if it is only a small thing. Making a small action helps to strengthen relationships with other people. It creates a sense of community. It reduces loneliness. And it tells you that there are things that you can do in this difficult and oftentimes concerning world.
I'm certain there are going to be several examples next week during Canadian Mental Health Week. Compassion is your theme, and hopefully we'll learn a lot more ways that people can demonstrate it during the course of this year, next year, and the rest of their lives, hopefully. Margaret Eaton, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Chris.
That was Margaret Eaton, the National CEO of the Canadian Mental Health Association. Coming up shortly, a huge, huge weekend for PWHL Ottawa. The head coach, Carla McLeod, joining us. CFRA's Ottawa Now. I'm Chris Holsky, and for Christy Cameron.